Why self-help sucks. Published 31 March 2010. This post is my response to This Is Water, a speech given by David Foster Wallace. If you haven't read it, then read it now, preferably twice. As I mentioned before, it's in my opinion the most profound thing that I've read in years, and not to sound pompous, but I read a fucking lot. I got a few comments and emails asking me for my thoughts on the speech, so I thought I'd lay them out here. The speech also finally gave me a way to wrap words around a subtle, yet real, discomfort I've always had for the self-help genre, which I'll get to at the end. One first and most obvious point of the speech was described expertly by a commenter, that we're a slave to our thoughts and our own perspective. Day in and day out, whether conscious or not, we choose what to focus on and what to think about. Most of us do this unconsciously, and as a result, we live in on an autopilot of selfishness and negativity. Wallace points out that by simply being mindful enough to A. become aware of our present reality, B. admit that we know little or nothing at any given time about said reality, and C. choose to assume the best and choose positive, unobtrusive thoughts, is the key to surviving a rather dull, banal, and repetitive existence which, let's admit, we all end up living. This idea is by no means new. Anyone who's practiced Zen or studied other forms of Buddhism will be very familiar with it. The concept of awareness or presence or simply being or egoless perspective comes up all the time in self-help and spiritual teachings, but I'll get to this in a minute. Two, there's a second and deeper point that raised a lot of confusion and questions from readers, and I think this is the concept of worship he speaks of towards the end. The idea that as humans we are by default programmed to worship something, be it religion or power, vanity or morality, and that again, if we retain the awareness and presence to consciously choose what to worship, we can avoid a lot of pain and suffering. This is kind of a deeper corollary to the first point, but I think it has much wider implications. The key phrase for me is one that is kind of glossed over with all of his talk about vanity, beauty, religion, etc. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into, day after day, getting more and more selective about what you see and how you measure value without ever being fully aware that that's what you're doing. I think this makes an easier translation to pick up in self-help terms, as we talk about the idea of value all the time, give value, create value, demonstrate value, raise your value, etc. But basically what he's saying is that a product of this choosing what to focus on is also choosing what to value. It means all of our measurements for success, value, and significance are chosen by us. Many people measure their value in terms of how much money they make, how attractive they are, how popular they are, how many women they sleep with, or how well they abide by some sort of morality or religion. But again, the downfall of all of these measurements of value is that they can suffer from the arrogance of certainty. Certainty of a reality, a lowercase d truth. People who unconsciously value themselves on money or power will become certain of their superiority or need to dominate. Those people who worship vanity and fame will become condescending and demanding, etc. Again, this comes back to the Buddhist concept of not knowing, a concept that paradoxically in and of itself is worshipped and valued. Not that that mystical stuff is necessarily true. The only thing that's capital T true is that you get to decide how you're gonna try to see it. What I think Wallace is saying is that we all end up defining value and our reality for ourselves, so the most important skill we can develop is the wherewithal to always choose wisely. Three, which brings me to why I love this speech so much. Wallace goes through enormous pains to consistently remind us that he's not proselytizing, that he's not giving a moral sermon, that he's not even telling anyone what to think, choose, or do. In fact, the whole speech is about how we all are responsible how we think and perceive reality. It's our responsibility. He's simply making observations about the state we all live in. It's philosophical observation, the original self-help. Which brings me to my qualms with a lot of the modern self-help genre and why I've always felt uneasy with it, even when I felt it was giving me decent advice. The whole notion behind self-help, that someone of some undefined authority is now going to impart superior information onto me, in and of itself implies an arrogance of certainty. Here's what to value, here's the measurement of success, here's what to worship. Despite all of the best intentions, I think this sabotages a grand chunk of the industry. How can you help someone to take responsibility for their own thoughts and awareness by giving them the your thoughts and awareness? I'm going to pick on Eckhart Tolle not because I think he's a bad guy, but he's the name that gets bandied about the dating advice industry more than anyone else, and because he's pretty mainstream at this point. The Power of Now was a good book. I personally have a lot of history with Zen Buddhism and philosophy, so none of it was really eye-popping or anything for me. What rubbed me wrong about it was the subtle yet implied notion that his lowercase d truth was somehow superior than my own or anyone else's. And I don't mean Tolle said so much or even thought that himself. I'm just saying that it's implied. You go out and pay $19.95 for a book that's supposed to make your life better. The fact that it even exists, by its very definition, is a presentation of an arrogance of certainty. It gives you a new yardstick to measure value and a new concept to worship. Be in the present, be in the now. But again, there's nothing mentioned about having the conscious awareness to choose your yardstick or what you worship. You just take it on authority like you did everything else in your life. But here's something to chew on: what if everyone experiences enlightenment differently? What if your path or my path is so estranged and distant from Tolle's that there's little to no common ground? Or even if the experience of enlightenment is universal, any attempt to convey that experience inevitably gets lost in both his filter of reality and the reader's. This has also always been my problem with many spiritual practices. Spirituality and higher consciousness, by their very definition, are something experienced. The second you convey it, you lose it. It's like trying to give someone an orgasm by writing a book about it. The same is true for dating. I can write 500 pages about my experiences, my analysis, and my recommendations with women, but your experiences can and probably will always be quite different than mine. And anytime you take my advice and use it, there's an implication of authority, of certain, and even of arrogance. That I am more aware of a certain reality than you, my grateful reader. In the end, we're all operating beneath inescapable filters. What David Foster Wallace is saying is that while we all tend to believe what is coming through our filter is truth, the filter itself is the only truth. It's the only certainty. That we choose how to digest reality and experience however we choose. And no matter how aligned our values, goals, and dreams may be with one another, they're always just perceptions of a greater unknowable reality, an idealized certainty in a vast infinity of not knowing. This freaks some people out, but if you rest with it, what you end up with is humility and respect, the recognition that all you really know is that you don't really know anything. And suddenly, the crowded grocery store becomes light and dancing. The self-help guru ceases to be an authority of truth and is rather yet another reference experience, another item to perceive, acknowledge, and integrate if you so choose. The girl who blows you out becomes another emotional expression of human interaction. The relationship had and lost becomes another ebb and flow of life, and any reason for fear or anger subsides to a deeper comfort and joy. That is real freedom, that is being educated and understanding how to think. The alternative is unconsciousness, the default setting, the rat race, the constant knowing sense of having had and lost some infinite thing. This state is what many self-help gurus, New Age spiritual figures, and RSD monkeys are always prattling on about, but you'll never find it in a book, a seminar, a DVD set, or a boot camp. No one can force you to be in this state. You'll only find it by searching your own skull-sized kingdom, by constantly reminding yourself, yes you, that means you, not a book, constantly reminding yourself day in, day out, this is water, this is water. And in my life, David Foster Wallace has been the one of the only people I've ever come across who can enunciate this with such painful clarity and elegance. For that, I'm eternally grateful. Three big ideas that can change your life. Receive a free 21-page PDF with three life-changing ideas, as well as exclusive interviews and site updates. Enter your email below for instant access.